Support comes from the Arizona Inn, a Four Diamond, family-owned historic resort hotel and restaurant on Elm Street near the U of A. Information is at arizonainn.com.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jim Nintzel, the editor of the Tucson Weekly and other Tucson local media publications, and we are here for Zona Politics. Today, we are talking with mayoral candidate Randy Dorman, who is a Democrat, making her first run for public office here in Tucson. And Randy, I think a lot of people probably don't even know who you are. You're running against what it looks like Raheena Romero and Steve Farley, who Raheena has been on the city council for a long time. Steve Farley's been in the state legislature for a long time. So people may know who they are if they follow politics. But who is Randy Dorman, and why is she running for mayor?
Thanks, Jim. It's great to be on with you. And thanks for that question. Yeah, I think a lot of people may be asking that. I have been in Tucson for 20 years. I'm originally from New York, where I had a successful career in advertising and global branding. I met my husband, Rob Paulus, a native Tucsonan, at a friend's party there. And a year later, we got engaged and moved right into downtown Tucson in 2001. And I think if you remember downtown Tucson at the time, in 2001, that was not an obvious choice. But to us, it was, because we saw what downtown could be and really wanted to do something about it. And a few months later, bought an old ice factory on the edge of downtown with some friends and turned it into the Ice House Lofts, which was the first residential loft conversion in all of Arizona. And I became really an advocate for downtown development and why that would be so important. And I'm running for mayor because I think Tucson has limitless potential, and I get frustrated that all too often we settle for the status quo. And I've been involved in the revitalization of downtown for almost 20 years. I want us to take the same vision and energy that we've brought to downtown and find opportunities throughout Tucson.
And you say that in Tucson, good enough is no longer good enough. And right. Talk about what you mean by that and what your vision is for the city's future.
Sure. Our built environment is mediocre at best. Every time we want to improve our quality of life, the excuse is, well, we don't have enough money because we're a low-wage town. Decade after decade, we default to that. Every time there's a new development, there's smart developments, there's large factions of people who don't want it there. And we tend to try to make everyone happy, which usually ends in mediocre results. So how is it okay that decade after decade, it's okay for us to be a low-wage town when we have incredible people, amazing entrepreneurs, a rich culture, natural beauty? We have all the makings of a remarkable city. We aim low. We pat ourselves on the back for stability, and I think stability should be the starting point, not the goal.
And you touch on something that I wanted to ask you about, because we often hear that some members of the business community complain that neighborhoods have too much power, and some neighborhood activists complain that the business community has too much influence at City Hall. And it's a somewhat simplistic breakdown, of course, but I'm wondering about how you, as somebody who has worked as a developer in Tucson, see that conflict playing out in Tucson politics today.
Well, it's so interesting because I've seen it from the developer side. I mean, we're small developers. We've done four or five projects. All of them have been urban infill, and all of them we start by working with the neighborhood. And I've also seen it on the neighborhood side. where I've been on the neighborhood side of things. And so it is really interesting that developers feel like neighborhoods have too much power and neighborhoods feel like developers have too much power. It's really a mismatch. I think that part of the problem is the neighborhoods need to be reinforced. Neighborhoods are the fabric of the community, but often the neighborhood association doesn't always reflect the will of the neighborhood. I think it's very challenging to get the kind of participation in those neighborhood associations that does reflect the whole neighborhood. Some of the neighborhood groups do it well, but Jim, offline, you and I were just talking about how as a working parent, it's almost impossible to make it to those meetings at 5:30. I mean, that's when you're coming home, picking up your child, making dinner, and so much of the involvement is at times that are not convenient or conducive to participation. I've been speaking with Planning and Development Services about how to improve that, and I think there's a lot that we could do with technology. All the city council meetings when there's rezonings and hearings, it's always at 5:30. And I think we need broader participation in those. I think the mayor and council need to understand that just because you might not be able to make it to that meeting doesn't mean that your voice shouldn't be heard. So I think if developers knew that they had actual input to work with, and if neighborhoods felt like developers were acting in good faith, the system would be much improved.
And your company is in the midst of doing the Trinity Mixed Use Project on 4th Avenue down near University Boulevard. Talk a little bit about what that development is all about and the work you did with the neighborhood there.
Sure. So on the corner of 4th and University, there's a church that has been there since the early 1900s called the Trinity Church. Their congregation had really shrunk, and they had an underutilized parking lot and some other land. And they realized that they could create some financial stability for the church if they had someone develop their land, especially because at the time, this was 2011, the streetcar was being planned. And they understood the opportunity there. So a lot of developers approached them about doing student housing, which they really didn't want to do. And they did an RFP to different developers. My husband, Rob, and I have a small company where we do urban infill development. And they asked us to participate, and we ended up being awarded the project. So a few months later in 2012, we had our first meeting with the West University Neighborhood Association, and we did not bring them any plans. We started by saying, you know, we'd like to do a development here. What would you like to see in your neighborhood? What are the amenities that you need? How does the site work and not work for you now? And we learned that they wanted different retail options, restaurant options, services. They wanted permeability in the site. And so before we started any of our plans, we really started working with the neighborhood. So over 6 years, we had over 20 neighborhood meetings and public hearings, and created two different buildings. One is an office building that's going up right now in the parking lot between Time Market and the church. And the second building will be a 58-unit apartment building with ground floor retail. We're super excited, and these are buildings that the neighborhood approved, the West University Historic Zoning Advisory Board approved, and it's an exciting project.
And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Randy Dorman, a Democrat running for mayor in Tucson this year. She is facing potentially, the candidates haven't filed yet, but City Councilwoman Rahina Romero and former state lawmaker Steve Farley. And Randy, there are other developments happening along 4th Avenue right now. There's some apartments going up at 4th Avenue and 6th Street. There's an apartment building going up further south near the underpass. And some people are worried that the unique charm of local businesses along 4th Avenue could be lost as more development happens there. And what is your vision for the future of 4th Avenue?
Yes, there are those two other developments which were developed in a very different way than ours. I mean, ours really put neighborhood first. And the reason that we thought that our location was such a great location is we think the character of 4th Avenue is invaluable. And we wanted to enhance that. We're at the very northern tip, right? Not right in the middle of it. But it was particularly important to us to be sensitive to the neighborhood. I think with those other developments, the historic 4th Avenue Coalition did a great job of working out the first community benefits agreement with the developer of the property on 4th Avenue and 6th Street. And they really wanted to ensure that local retail would be able to occupy the ground floor. And it's a conundrum because construction costs are high, and so developers want to get a certain return on what they're building. But that coalition was able to create, I think it was the first CBA in Arizona, and I'm so proud of them for doing that. In all of our developments, any retail or office that we've had, it's always been local businesses, and I think that's really important. There is a little bit of a dilemma on 4th Avenue where there's a lot of buildings that have not been maintained. And so if you want those owners to invest in the buildings, there may be some turnover of business. But I do hope that those businesses remain local and remain filled with character.
Let me ask you, shift gears away from development and go over to the initiative, the Families Free and Together initiative, the so-called Sanctuary City initiative that folks are collecting signatures on right now. Do you support that?
Thank you for that question, and it is the question that everyone is asking. I originally did not take a position on it because I like doing primary research, and I wanted to make sure that I had that I was able to meet with the people who wrote it, and I did that just the other week. And what I like to do is not just understand what is in the initiative, but what was the intention behind it? So when I spoke with one of the authors, he explained that there had been families whose family members had been deported and then either were killed or had committed suicide, and that the initiative was meant to prevent that from happening in the future. And I think, I don't have to go into how complex the issue is in general, but some of the background is that in response to SB 1070, the Tucson Police Department created a policy of how their department would act to enforce the law but protect families and protect the people in our community and not focus on immigration status. And then that was revised in 2017. And as I asked more about the initiative, it occurred to me that instead of doing this whole political initiative, I asked, well, have you tried to collaborate with the Tucson Police Department to make the changes that you want to see and just make it as a policy change? Because to me, that's a much more direct and effective way. Because if we do declare ourselves a sanctuary city officially, the state really has our hands tied, and there could be consequences to our community of up to $100 million. So that's a long way of saying I am not supportive of the initiative specifically, because I think that there is a practical solution, and I think they went for a political solution, and I would always favor a practical solution over a political solution that has really, you know, significant unintended consequences for us.
Let's talk a little bit about transportation. So the city is planning on widening Broadway between downtown and Country Club, construction scheduled to begin in the near future. Do you think the city is approaching the Broadway widening in the right way, or is there something you'd like to see the city do differently there?
You know, I kind of think of the Broadway widening as our Brexit a little bit. Something that was voted on that a while ago. It doesn't always seem like a logical solution to me, but it seems like we're already well on our way. And I think that there are some facets of it that are being improved. So I hope that that goes well. I'll tell you longer term, what I'd like to focus on is creating plans for expanding our streetcar, which is only 4 miles long, and pairing that with high-speed bus lines, because I think we need to start shifting to a public transportation system that people will choose to use. Right now, it's not a desirable system, and if we want to really have a positive impact on our environment, less car use and more public transportation use is something we should focus on.
And if you're just joining us here on KXCI, we are talking with Randy Dorman, Democratic candidate for mayor. I'm Jim Ninsel, and you're listening to Zona Politics. And you mentioned transit, and the transit system has several funding sources. There's federal dollars, there's the fare paid by riders, but it does require a significant investment from the city's general fund. Some folks complain that the city spends too much from the general fund on the transit, and some people say it spends too little. What are your thoughts in terms of just the amount, the city's investment in transit? You're saying you'd like it to be a more robust system. Would you like to see that come out of the city's general fund, or how do we pay for that?
Okay, so I think it's important to understand that public transportation does not directly pay for itself. People who
anywhere,
use that
anywhere in the world.
Anywhere is not meant to. People who use that as a metric, it's disingenuous at best. It is an amenity, it is an economic development tool, and it is an environmental sustainability tool. And so we have to think of it that way. When you take cars off the road, how much money do you save in road repairs if your roads are being used left? There's, you know, endless benefits that are seen all over the world to better public transportation. We just have not caught up yet. And so I, like I do with everything, I would do a deep dive into research and looking into the budget, which I've spent a lot of time looking through as part of running for mayor. And as a city, we would have to decide where our priorities lie. But I do think that we need to be funding more public transportation and not be dissuaded by people who think it should pay for itself. But my big push is we need to build our economy. And that by doing so, we'll have more money for things like public transportation.
And how about bus fares? Do you think they're too high, too low, or just about right now?
I think that for most people, they are just about right. But for many people, they're still too high. And like I said, I am not a believer that our public transportation system should pay for itself. So I think that waivers for people who cannot pay for them are absolutely justified.
Which the city has now. They do have a low income program for bus riders, which I don't think many cities in the country, a lot of cities have for seniors or children or what have you, but very few have a low income program. So the city's kind of unique in that way. But in terms of the fare recovery, because we are talking, you know, no one expects a bus system to pay for itself. I think the general...
Well, not no one. I just think that we should not.
Right. Well, many, but most people, in general, they don't pay for themselves. But I'm wondering, in terms of fare recovery, you know, I think the city has a goal of about 25%. Somewhere in that neighborhood of fares supporting the system. You think that's about the right number?
Well, I don't know if that's about the right number, but I mean, right now we only have a system where people who need to use the buses use them. And I think that's the big flaw. I want us to create a system that people choose to use. And then you have a whole new group of people who will be able to pay into the system. I think that's very different than the system that we have now.
Yeah. And if you are just tuning in, we're talking with Randy Dorman, Democratic candidate for mayor here on Zona Politics. And let's shift gears a little bit. And you've mentioned that the city should do more with annexation in order to bring in more residents, get more money from the state. The city has certainly tried to annex areas of the Catalina foothills in the past with little success. What new pitch do you think you could make to persuade people to agree to annexation?
Well, I mean, first, the system's very complex. So I have really been careful to not say that flippantly or like you can just wave a magic wand and make that happen. There's a huge notification program that has to happen. You have to get buy-in from the people who own the building, the home, the area, not just the people who are living there. And sometimes those are out of state. So it's very complex. But if we don't continue on the path of trying to annex more properties into the city, we continue to lose state-shared revenue to Phoenix instead of keeping it here. So besides those complexities, the things that I think we can affect are confidence in city government and confidence that the city is looking towards the future and building a more vibrant and thriving Tucson, and also is accountable. If people have confidence in city government and in city services, they will be more likely to annex. I think one of my big points of difference versus the other candidates is that I've been a businesswoman for 30 years, and I have a range of experience working with multi-billion dollar companies and making sure their needs were met and owning my own small business. So when it comes to economic development and accountability and efficiency, I'm the candidate that really understands that because I understand business.
And Tucson does have some serious issues with poverty, particularly single moms who live in poverty in Tucson. And I'm wondering about some strategies that you would pursue in order to combat poverty in Tucson.
Sure. I think poverty and also homelessness are incredible challenges for us here. And in a community with so much potential, it really breaks my heart that we have such a high percentage of our population experiencing both poverty and homelessness. We also have incredible organizations trying to help in that regard. And, you know, when I became chairwoman of the Downtown Tucson Partnership Board, made up of stakeholders downtown, and one of the hurdles to success that our board brought up was the increasing homeless population in downtown Tucson, especially in the park outside the library. Now, I had done work with a group called the Legal Action Center for the Homeless in New York, and we had lawyers who would go into soup kitchens and advise people of the services available and what their rights were, and then they would use that knowledge to work with the state legislature to change laws to support the homeless population. So I knew how complex the issues were for people facing homelessness, and that it's not just a question of, you know, moving people from one place to another. So We set up a compassion first policy at the Downtown Tucson Partnership, and we had a crew who would do who would work with to keep downtown clean and safe. We partnered with an existing organization called Old Pueblo Community Services, and they have a housing first model where they put people in homes and then surround them with services. So we did a simple collaboration with them. We put a table in the park with a sign that read, "Need a home." And 5 days a week, we sat with people and found them housing. And in 3 months, we had we found 85 people permanent or temporary housing. And in 4 months, we had reduced chronic homelessness downtown by 95%.
So it sounds like one of the things you'd be looking for as mayor is partnering with social service agencies, as Mayor Rothschild has done.
Exactly. But really doing it more robustly, because the city is connected to so many social service organizations. Those organizations are not always connected to the people in need. And so that is what we did. That was the missing link with the Downtown Tucson Partnership. And I think programs like that could be expanded citywide, and the city could really act as the connector between many of the existing social services and the people who need them. So that would be one way to tackle it.
All right. And I have a dozen more questions, but we only have time for one more. And
okay,
we have to make
pick
it brief.
A good one, Jim.
We
got a good one.
We only have a minute left, so it'll have to be an easy one. Or a brief one answer anyway. Tucson is a city with very low funding for the arts per capita. I met you first when you were involved with the Museum for Contemporary Art in downtown. And I'm just wondering, should we be doing more to support the arts from the city's point of view?
100%. So when I joined MoCA, we were a small museum on Toole. I was president for almost 6 years and helped really, move us forward into the world-class museum we are now. The arts are an economic driver, and the arts make our lives worthwhile. The arts are so important. And we treat arts like an amenity here. It is really an integral part of our community. And do you know that every dollar invested into the arts locally, almost all of it stays local? You know, it goes to pay for employees and services. And then when people come to our institutions, the other money that they spend, arts, I really want to focus on leveraging the arts as an economic driver, and as, you know, something that really make our lives vibrant and thriving. And right now, we have the best arts leadership in town that we have ever had. It's really an exciting time to be involved with the arts.
All right, we are going to have to leave it there. My guest has been Randy Dorman. She's running for mayor of Tucson in the Democratic primary, which will be decided in August. Get out and meet the candidates. And Randy, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jim. It's always great to speak with you.
And I'm Jim Nintzel, your host for Zone of Politics, and that's our show for this week. Tune in next week. Thank you so much.
Zone of Politics is made possible with the generous support of The Loft Cinema, Tucson's independent movie theater. The Loft features independent, foreign, and documentary films, cult classics, discussions with filmmakers, and much more, including the Loft Film Fest in November. The Loft is located at 3233 East Speedway Boulevard. Showtimes can be found at loftcinema.org.